Acts 5:3. But Peter said, "Ananias, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit and keep back part of the price of the land for yourself?" Kaufman said about this, "This is the first sin recorded against any member of the Lord's body. It might not be the first sin committed by a member, but it is the first one mentioned." And the question, "Why has Satan filled your heart to lie?" The destructive trait of the evil one is affirmed by this apostle's question. But it should be noted that although initiated by Satan, the sin was still counted as the fault of Ananias. Therefore, he yielded to evil desires. Peter, led by the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, knows of the hypocrisy of Ananias. Peter also recognizes that Satan is the father of all liars. From the beginning, Satan lied to Eve. Here, Satan inspires this deception in Ananias. We must never forget that Satan is the arch-deceiver, the adversary who spends every second of every day in an endless pursuit of souls. We do know that Ananias permitted Satan to fill his heart. Ananias was held responsible for what he did, and therefore he permitted Satan to prompt him to do the evil. There seems to be an inspiration of the devil as well as an inspiration of the Holy Spirit. We may infer here that Satan is a real being acting upon and influencing men to do evil. That Ananias had the power to resist Satan's influence, or he would not have been punished. So Ananias had the power to resist Satan's influence here. Otherwise, God wouldn't have punished him if he had no power to resist Satan here. So, God tells us that he always gives us an out, an escape from the Satan tries to entrap us and tempt us. We always have a way of escape. Unfortunately, Ananias refused to use that open door that was there. The phrase "to lie to the Holy Spirit." How was it that this sin was a lie to the Holy Spirit? Many have supposed that this came through the fact of the apostles having been baptized in the Holy Spirit. But there is more to it than that. It is true that Ananias laid his money at the feet of the apostles, but he had more than them in view at the time. He intended to influence the opinion and judgment of the whole congregation, and the Holy Spirit dwells in the whole congregation. Verse 4, while it remained, it was it not your own? So while you had the proceeds of this land that you sold, and while it was in your possession, was it not your own? And well, talking about the land. The land was your own, and after you sold the land, was it not in your own control? So now you had the money, and the money's in your own control. Why have you conceived this thing in your heart? You have not lied to men, but to God. And Kaufman said, this verse is the emphatic declaration that there was no compulsion whatsoever upon Ananias, either to sell his land or to give the money afterward. Those who sold their land did it voluntarily. Indeed, these words can hardly be understood in any other way. So they did not have to sell the land in order to give it to support the Christians that were far away from home and needed support. They did not have to sell their land. And then even after they sold their land, they did not have to give any money to the apostles to then be transferred to these needy people. They didn't have to do any of it. This was on their own voluntary free will. They were not pressured in any way to do something that they didn't want to do. So this was 100% all their conceived idea that they've allowed Satan to deceive them by. Peter's rebuke of Ananias was administered by the Holy Spirit, but there is not the slightest hint that Peter struck Ananias dead, or even that God had told Peter that such a thing would occur. Like the shaking of the house when they all prayed, this was something God did independently of any desire of the apostles. Men simply do not like to think of God or Christ as a being whom they should fear. And such a narrative as this was designed to correct such an incorrect perception of deity. So this corrected the false perception that anyone might have had that we should not fear God, and that God will be the, if we question if God's going to be the judge of us on the final day and going to sentence us to a spiritual death if we are unrighteous, if any of us have that false misconception, the passage such as this will help change this. And what Kaufman was saying, that sure helped anyone in the congregation that had a false conception that there was not going to be any penalties for disobedience. Well, that was all removed right here with just an instant, over a three-hour period. But it was removed from the congregation's mind just over Ananias, just instantly. And then it gets repeated with Sapphira coming soon after, 3 hours later. But verse 5, then Ananias, hearing these words, fell down and breathed his last. So great fear came upon all those who heard these things. And Kaufman said, those who view this act of divine judgment against this couple as some kind of vindictive and spiteful punishment inflicted by the apostle Peter are totally wrong. It was not Peter, but God who executed this extreme penalty. And the contrast of it with the long-suffering and patience of the Father concerning the sins of the whole human race leads to the conclusion that there were the most substantial reasons for what God did here. And the phrase, great fear came upon all, Kaufman said, there is no doubt that many had been tempted, like Ananias and Sapphira, to pretend a holiness that they did not possess. This divine act, therefore, had the consequence of impressing upon the young Christians the awful reproach of sin and of warning non-Christians of the danger of associating themselves with the new and popular movement for purely selfish motives. This great fear upon both Christians and outsiders alike was precisely the effect that was desired by God. And the Christians of the first century learned four things in a very graphic way. First, that God searches the hearts of men. Two, God judges the motives of men. Three, fraud and hypocrisy will be detected. And four, God's judgments are swift and severe. So I'll finish up rereading these four lessons that Kaufman said the Christians of the first century learned in a very graphic way, very quickly, from this one account. And it was, God searches the hearts of men, God judges the motives of men, fraud and hypocrisy will be detected, and God's judgments are swift and severe. So we will end there, and Lord willing, we will start with verse 6 next week.